Translation and proper by Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Maharaj Parikshit said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is eternally situated in His transcendental position. Yet He descends to this material world and manifests Himself in various incarnations. His first incarnation was that of a great fish. O most powerful Sukadeva Goswami, I wish to hear from you the pastimes of that fish incarnation. Purport: the Supreme Personality Godhead is all-powerful. Yet He accepted the form of an uncommon fish. This is one of the 10 original incarnations of the Lord. Om Agyanatimiran Dasya Gyana Jana Shalakaya Chakshurmilitan Yana Tashmai Shri Guru Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Datati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Raghunatham Shri Raitavi Shri Vishakham Vitam Cha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyasya Kripa Sandubhyasya Vacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we read the translation once again. Maharaj Parikshit said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is eternally situated in His transcendental position. Yet He descends to this material world and manifests Himself in various incarnations. His first incarnation was that of a great fish. O most powerful Sukadeva Goswami, I wish to hear from you the pastime of the fish incarnation. So, welcome to this program of Bhagavatam. Reading the sense of the all Vedic knowledge is a pure nectar that we get to drink. It's all we should thank Srila Prabhupada that today the scriptures, the great scriptures are available to us in such a simple language for our understanding of our laymen, of our common people. Otherwise, normally this was spoken among the great sages, like we know of that in the Maisharanya, Suta Goswami, when he was speaking to the sages, they were all erudite, scholarly people, well-versed in the whole Shastric knowledge. And today we can see like we are coming from different backgrounds, like some very young, some bit not all that young. And we are involved in reading the Srimad Bhagavatam and understanding it. So it's very essential that we make the most of it, try to understand the best, because the human form of life, as we very well know, is very valuable because of the intelligence that's given to us for understanding. At the same time, it's very short comparatively. And major of the time, as we know, is used up in unnecessary things. We have our basic requirements. If you to deduct all those basic requirements of our life, and then our working conditions, maintenance of family, and so on. And if you reduce all that, go on deducting from the real life span that we have, what is left is very limited. So whatever minutes and seconds we get to understand this great scripture, we should make the most of it. Like we are seeing how Maharaj Parikshit, he never stopped asking Sukadeva Goswami. He kept on insisting for more and more. Yeah. Even like now, after having understood or heard about so many pastimes of the Supreme Lord, he still wants to know more. This should be our attitude to want to ask and know more about the Supreme Lord, about His pastimes. And precisely that's the purpose why the Supreme Lord takes or He descends to this material world. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam, to perform these leelas more for the benefit of the devotees than the real purpose or the other purpose which He says is vinashaya cha dushkritam, which actually could be done by any of His energies which are working for Him. So if He has come, if He has taken the trouble precisely for our benefit, so it's our not only duty, but also we can say an obligation that we should make the most of these pastimes, read them over and over again. These are not gossips. These are real purpose of life, the purpose, the pastimes that God Himself has performed. And we should create a taste. Initially, maybe it is difficult because of our old habits of so many past lives, which we have been involved in so many abominable activities. This taste, which is there for the Supreme Lord, for His pastimes, is, like say, covered. So we have to discover this taste again and come to the point of tasting it, like how Parikshit Maharaj, during his 7 days of his last days of his life, which was left, as we know, he didn't sleep a wink, nor did he ask for a glass of water. So much was his intensity to hear about the Supreme Lord that he wouldn't stop. So this should be our attitude as well. Whenever we get an opportunity and an association of a devotee, because it is sometimes difficult, you cannot be having devotees all around you, And of course, even time is also sometimes limited. So whenever you get this time and devotees around you, we should make the most of it. Be inquisitive. Ask them. Share with them what you know also as well. There should be an inter-exchange of the knowledge that one has achieved. So here we see how the first thing he's asking him is that Hari, the Supreme Personality Godhead, is situated in His transcendental position. So, from their statement we can understand that there are two types of worlds, you can say, material world and something which is beyond the material. Because the word transcendental, when he says he's in a transcendental position, means it has to be a situation which is different from this material world. In material world, we are experiencing it. We are seeing it. So we know about this material world. Well, we think we know about this material world. We think. Only thing we can assure in this material world is there are sufferings. Because that's what we are going through. Unless one person is blind to it. No. If we are intelligent, we will know that we all of us are suffering. We are seeing how time is passing by. Dehinosman yatha dehe kumaram yovanam jara. How we were at one time young, strong, fit. We had vigor in our body. How that has been going away slowly. Of course, it's for those people like our age, not for young students, like people. There are young also boys over here. So they are experiencing this youth now. But you can see that what happened to us will happen to you in future. And after that, there comes a time that, again, more sufferings comes of the old age, disease, all that's involved. Jarma mrityu jara vyadi dukha dukhanu doshanam. This is, no one is spared from it. Everyone will have to go through it in this material world. So we know this is a material world. We are going through it. But here now, Maharaj Parikshit is saying that Krishna or Hari is situated in a transcendental position. So what do you understand? That means a position which transcends this material world, which is beyond this material world. What is this that makes this material world a material world, differentiated from the spiritual world? What's the difference between the material world and the spiritual world? It's the modes of nature. The conditioning of the modes of nature, which makes this world a material world. In the spiritual world, there is no conditioning. You're free from this conditioning. There are no gunas. We know the good mode of gunas, the mode of goodness, the passion, and ignorance. So the absence of these three gunas makes the spiritual world spiritual. Otherwise it becomes material. So this Lord, although he created this material world, it is his creation. We cannot deny it because nobody else can create this something so beautiful, so perfect. The rising of the sun, the supply of oxygen, water, gravity, and so on, grains, food, fruits, flowers, so beautiful collection of creation which God has done for us. And such a beautiful creation is created by him. Although it is his creation, but he is there, his presence is there, otherwise this wouldn't function. Without the presence of his energies, this wouldn't be functioning. But at the same time, simultaneously, he is not there. He is in a spiritual abode. That is his inconceivable quality of the Supreme Lord. Being here at the same time, not being here. So, here he is manifesting that the Supreme Lord is situated in the transcendental position. Brahma Samhita explains which is that abode of Lord Supreme Krishna. Beyond this material sphere is a spiritual atmosphere. And within the spiritual atmosphere also there are many planets. It starts from the Vaikuntha planet. The word Vai means without. Kuntha is miseries. There is no miseries in those worlds. Miseries, as we said, are created by the conditioning of the modes. Once there are no modes, there are no miseries. You regain your constitutional position of Satchit Ananda. Eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That is our real constitutional position of the soul, which comes from the spiritual world. As soon as you get in touch with these material modes, what happens is, it's become Asat, Achit, and Niranand. It is no more, because it is, the fact is, it's not that it is asat. The soul still continues to be sat. It's eternal. But because it associates with the body, it feels that it becomes a body. It gets the mentality that it is a body. Now it's no more a soul. So when it dies, it feels that it is dying, but actually it's not dying. It's an illusion of Maya. This is covering of Maya, which makes it feel that we are going through this process of the material world. That now we have become asat, now that we have become achit, that we have no more knowledge. The knowledge is there. And Ananda is also there. But we are looking in the wrong direction. If you were to lose something and you don't know where you kept it, you keep on groping for it, you keep on searching for it. And many times it happens that you look for all the wrong places. Finally, when something strikes to you and then you go to the right direction and you get your object which you are looking for. Right? So this is what is happening like here. We come to the wrong place searching for what actually we possess. It's with us. It's like saying, have a key in your pocket and looking for a key all around. And finally you realize the key was in your pocket. No? So everything is with us. Only thing is we are wrongly directed. Because of the illusion of Maya. Maya's work is to create this curtain of illusion in front of us. She creates this curtain of illusion and at that moment everything is like obliterated. It's like lost. Our consciousness is lost. It's deviated. And what we start doing is looking for that Sat, Chit and Anand in the wrong places. So Krishna, it explains Brahma Samhita that in that spiritual world, Krishna, the Hari, original Hari, the creator of everything, is residing in a place called Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Dhamni, Nija Dhamni, Talecha Tasya, Devi, Mahesh, Hari Dhamashu, Teshu, Teshu. He is residing in Goloka Vrindavan. And what is he doing in the Goloka Vrindavan? Is he like, sometime, have you wondered, sometime like we say, owners of a multi international companies, no? And they are having, let's say, branches all over the world, right? And with thousands of people, 200,000, 300,000 people working for them, big offices, big bank accounts, And we may feel that the boss of the company sitting in their office is just working hard on his computer, trying to figure out the figures and so on. But nothing of that happens. The boss there is wondering what will he go and do in the evening, with whom is he going to dine, next morning which sports he is going to play, I mean where he is going to play his sporting games. That's what he is doing there. He's least worried. There are people working for him. He doesn't have to be worried about how his sales and his purchases and his manufacturing is going on. So this is like the situation, you can say, the original boss, Lord Krishna. His creation is there, his energies are working, they're perfectly working, but he's least concerned about them. Because he's perfect. In the material world, maybe some company boss will have to worry about some of his concerns. But he knows, because he's perfect. And his creation is also perfect. His energies are perfectly working for him. So in that situation, what is Krishna doing then? We sing, we chant every day. Venum kvanantam aravinda dalayataksham. He's playing on his flute with the blooming eyes and the bluish hue, attracting even the cupid, with his long garlands reaching up to his knees. His every organ is doing the function of every other organ. He's attracting the gopis, he's playing with the cows, tending the cows. That is his pastime, doing the Rasa Leela with the gopis. Doing so many, and all others living entities which are there with him, and what are they doing? They are playing with him. But they are playing with him for his enjoyment. That's the difference. You do things, you do it, there are two ways. Either you do it for yourself. When you say for yourself, means your family and your society and your nation. Everything there is included. That is yourself. Or you do it for Krishna. So that's what differentiates the two activities, making the activities either spiritual or material. There in the spiritual world, all activities are done for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. That's the real position, or the authentic constitutional position of the soul. Jivere Swarupa hai Nitya Krishna Das. That's the constitution. We are Nitya Krishna Das, the eternal servant of the Lord. And what does the servant has to do? He has to serve the master. And when he serves the master, how does the master reciprocate? By taking care of the servant. That's the natural flow of affection and dealings. Even we see in this in our current material world. When a servant is sincerely serving his master, the master is automatically pleased with the servant and he fulfills all his requirements. Isn't so? I mean, those who are involved in and having some servants or having some concerns or businesses will know very well. When particular employee is working very well, the boss is happy with the employee. But not like those employees who are just like a concern about their benefits, thinking, when are they going to get their holidays? What salary are they going to receive? And why is it so less? The other person is collecting more than what I'm getting. Or I'm working more than the person. So and so on. We can see the arguments which are existing. So in those situations, what happens? The flow of affection and love between the proprietor, the owner, and the servant is not the same. It becomes like a bit reserved. But in the spiritual world, all the jivas which are there, everything, every jiva, I wouldn't say, it's not only the human form of the jivas, you can say. Every jiva there is conscious. Even the objects are conscious. The trees, the birds, the objects, they all are serving Krishna. And so much so, like, we know the story of Damodara Astaka. In Damodara Katha, what happens? We know about the milk being boiled in the pot, and when it fell, that milk won't be taken by Krishna. So it went to the extent of committing a suicide. That's how it's explained, that it wants to burn itself in the fire. So even the objects are conscious. They want to serve Krishna. The flowers which were there on the head of Yashoda Mata, went down on the grounds to relieve the burden of Yashoda Mata, who was chasing Krishna. Isn't it? So even the flowers, the milk, the stone, everything is conscious over there, and they want to serve Krishna. That's the real attitude of a jiva, to serve Krishna. So this is what is happening in the spiritual world. But this doesn't mean that because he's involved there in the spiritual world with his eternal activities, that he's unconscious of what is happening in the material world. Although he's not involved, but he's conscious of everything which is happening. The very fact, because those jivas which are here in this material world are also his part and parcels. No? Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita in 15.7, where he says, Mame Vamsha Jiva Loka Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Mana Shastrani Indriyani Prakati Sthani Parashkarishyati. Mame Vamsha Jiva, the Jiva Lokas are my part, fragmented part of me. They are not separated from me. Just because a father has two children or various children, and one of the child is a bit stubborn and naughty, doesn't mean the father will ignore the child completely. On the contrary, those children require more attention than the obedient child, because the obedient child is already a good child. And those stubborn and naughty and miscreants, you can say, they are the ones who require more attention. So he is conscious of everything which is happening in this material world. And then what happens? Whenever he sees now these so fragmented part of mine, my children, although, okay, they are miscreants, they are naughty, but now they are suffering more than what they should be suffering because of some disturbances caused by some demons, by some greater miscreants, bigger miscreants. It's like two brothers fighting. Two bad brothers, let's say, two miscreant brothers, two naughty brothers fighting. One is very strong, other is weak. Doesn't the father intervene to protect the weak child? He says, hey, you stop there. Although both are naughty. But still, between them, one if is very strong, is a bigger, naughtier person, boy, than the other. The father intervenes. So same way, in this creation, in this material world, it is to be understood is for those miscreants who didn't want to serve Krishna, they wanted to serve for themselves, for their own benefit, for their own enjoyment. So this material creation was done for them, so that they could do whatever they pleased and get the results of their own activities. So they are being like imitation gods, you can say, doing the activities and getting the results of the activities. But at the same time, they are still the part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord will never ignore them. So what happens when these kind of disturbances, when the greater demon is, or miscreant, is harming the weaker miscreant, Krishna intervenes. Yada yada hi dharmasya klanir bhavati bharata. He says in Bhagavad Gita 4.7, 8 and 9, he explains the reasons of his coming. He says, I come whenever there's a fall in the morality, disturbance in the religion, he has to come and reinstate that religion. He has to come, paritranaya sadhunam, he has to come to protect the devotees. There are also people, although miscreants, but trying now to get out of this material world. It's not that once you are confined to this jail, this prison of the material world, means you will be confined for eternity. No. We have a chance. Krishna comes off and on. He sends, comes by himself. He comes through his representatives. And through them, he guides us how to come out of the material world in case we have now decided to come out. Because this free will of choosing to remain in this material world or coming out of this material world is with us. Yatesha chashi tatha kuru. Krishna is telling Arjuna that I have explained to you everything. The knowledge is there. Now you do as you wish. No? So that free will to desire to come out of this material world is there with us. So he comes and he re-establishes the codes of morality, of religion, the codes of conduct. And with those, with the help of those, some people get inspired and they want to come out after the material world, following that process of the instructions laid by the Supreme Lord. So this is what we understand from this, that his transcendental position, he is situated in his transcendental position, but yet he descends to this material world and manifests himself in various incarnations. Now the question arises, does he always come in his original form as Krishna? No. Here it says that he comes in various incarnations. Now incarnations, we normally would understand because we have a limited vision of seeing the things. Right? Because like how Prabhupada explains, is a frog mentality, Dr. Frog. He's inside a well and he knows as much as the boundaries of the well. Beyond that he doesn't know. So we feel that if God comes, he has to come somewhere like you and me. He has to come and talk to me. He has to come and show me his face and prove to me that he's God. Otherwise he's not God. No? That's what our normally questions are. When we see some, you say, how do you say he is God? Why is he God? The very fact when Krishna, he himself descended about 5,000 years, there were so many, even his own family members and his other associates were not aware that he's God. Because we feel that he should come and demonstrate to us first, like prove to us that he is God. But this happens. He's come for a certain purpose. He's not come here to justify or to prove that he's God. He's God. God doesn't have to prove that he's God. Normally it's like that. If you're a good person, you're a good person. You don't have to prove to people. Your own qualities and your own behavior will prove to others that you're a good person. So even God is like that. Scriptures are there describing his advent. His qualities are describing his character, his personality. He doesn't need to justify that he's God. So here says that he comes in various incarnations. Now, when we were to say some person, some pastimes of the Supreme Lord, that when he comes to this material world, you know, he came in the form of half man, half lion. Hey, you pulling my leg? God with half man? Where are these kind of people? Where do you see these kind of people? Half man, half lion? No. But yeah, the Shastra is saying it. And he can do it. Why can't he do it? If he can create 8.4 million species of life, which many of them we have not even seen them, and if we were to see them, some of the species which we have not seen them nor heard of them, we wouldn't believe that they exist. Such rare species, they are existing. If they can exist, why this species as a half man, half lion cannot come? Why can't he make himself into half man, half lion? But still, people then when they hear these stories, then they say, it's a myth, a mythology, stories, fairy tales. Yes, we are hearing this, like it happens. Because nowadays, the so-called scholars and intelligence, they feel they know everything. They need proofs. Show me, demonstrate to me, as if they know everything. And if you don't demonstrate to them or show them a man with a half man, half lion, they say, I don't believe it. But there are so many things in the world we don't see, we just read. And with the reading, we believe them. Then after 6 months, the theory changes. Everything changes. What was said 6 months back is no more valid. So then again your thoughts change. Now this is perfect. The other thing which was said 6 months back is not perfect. Now what I'm telling you is perfect. So this goes on. This cheating process is going on. Yeah? So people in this world, they are looking for some solid proofs. But Krishna says he doesn't care. He comes in an incarnation which suits the need of the situation. We know very well those incarnations which he came as a half man, half lion. What was the reason, right? We know that Hiranyakashipu, he had certain blessings. And with those blessings, he was almost immortal. I mean, there had to be some species, some rare species, which could come and just kill him. So he had to invent those rare species. He had to come with those rare ideas and kill him. At the same time, respecting the blessings which Lord Brahma, Jai Shri Radha Gokulanda ki jai, Shri Pati Ramchandra Lakshman ma ki jai, Gauritai ki jai, Samvet Bhaktivinoda ki jai. So we know that he advances, he comes, and he can do anything. That's one thing we have to learn, we have to understand. Regarding the matters and pastimes of God, we have to listen them with the folded hands and with all the acceptance. No defiance, no challenge. Because if there is challenge and defiance, then we will never understand the Supreme God. The Supreme God, to understand, it should be in the mood of rendition, of submission. There should be submission. If there is no submission, just a defiance, then we will never understand the Supreme Personality Godhead. So here it says that he manifests himself into various incarnations. That means Parikshit Maharaj, till now, he had already heard of different incarnations of his. We have to understand, because now we are in the 8th canto. We know that Bhagavatam is explaining the 10 aspects. There are different aspects. There are 10 basic aspects of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam, Poshanam, Upataya, Manvantara, Isha, Anukatha. And now Isha Anukatha is those pastimes of Lord which he has heard. And now is coming to the point of Nirodha, dissolution, the destruction. He wants to rush with it the quickest possible, because he is waiting, because the time passes, he is waiting for the sweet nectarian pastimes of Lord, where the samam bhunam, the ashraya aspect of Bhagavatam will be explained. To understand the ashraya aspect, the 10th canto, we had to be prepared with the previous cantos. But now he is trying to rush into it to see, to cover all the topics which are there up to that point. After that will be mukti, and then will be ashraya. The sanam bhumam, the sense of the whole thing, which is the pure nectar. The simple pastimes of his robbing the butter and troubling the gopis. Very, very simple childish pastimes. But they are the most sublime and the most purest essence of the whole knowledge. If we were to understand those, of course. Don't look at them from the simple, as a simple stories, from the mundane with attitude. Those stories, those pastimes I'm giving, and too much, so much of knowledge to us that can help us to liberate from this material world. They are just simple stories, but more powerful than even the strongest energy of the material nature. It's unbelievable, right? It's something like how a lotus plant can fight against a sword. So we say the sword is material world, is material energy, and the lotus plant, you can compare it to the spiritual activities of the Lord. But it can fight. We know the results. It happens. So here he says he manifests in various incarnations. Now here what he wants to know is, his first incarnation was that of a fish. O most powerful Sukadeva Goswami, I wish to hear from you the pastime of the fish incarnation. We will just rapidly go to the second and third verse, because we have to read for today, and see its purport, and then continue with this. So in the second and third, which is together, it says, I'll read the English translation. What was the purpose for which the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of a fish, exactly as an ordinary living being accepts different forms under the laws of karma? The form of a fish is certainly condemned and full of terrible pain. O my Lord, what was the purpose of this incarnation? Kindly explain this to us, for hearing about the pastime of the Lord is auspicious for everyone. He is doing it, you can see, his hearing is auspicious for everyone. He wants to know for himself and for the rest. This is called hita, benefits of the other. Hita is benefit. Always when we should do some things, we should see, is going to benefit me, and will it benefit the others, or only me? Only me is selfishness. When we do for the hita jagat, hita, then it becomes benefit for everybody. That is a Brahmanical quality. That everyone, everything we do, we should see that everyone gets benefit, especially when it is relating to kathas. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, the Parikshit Maharaj question to Sukadeva Goswami was based on this principle, stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuthanam adharmasya tadatmanam sajjami ham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. The Lord appears in each incarnation to save the world from irreligious principle and specially to protect His devotees. Paritarnaya sadhunam. Vamande, for example, appeared to save the devotee Bali Maharaj. Similarly, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of a fish, He must have done so to favor some devotee. Parikshit Maharaj was eager to know about the devotee for whom the Supreme Lord accepted this form. So, Parikshit Maharaj asking a question is important. He said, why at all he had to take the form of a fish? Now, this question he is asking is like how a mundane person would ask a question. When he already heard about the stories of previously in the 7th canto, as was explained, the appearance of Narsingadev as half man, half lion. Again, we saw that he came even as Vamandev, as a dwarf. I mean, asking this question, then why did he come in this such an abominable form as a fish? Wouldn't make sense, because we have seen forms even much more abominable than a fish. But he's asking this because normally a person could ask, a general person could ask, but God as fish and why as a fish? The question is there. Why as a fish? He could have taken any other form. But no. As we said before, he comes in the form which suits the requirements, the needs of the situation. Whenever there's requirement of a particular thing, he has to appear in that body. It's like when, how do we can explain this? Like a person, when he is at home, he's wearing certain kind of clothes. His casual clothes, no? You can say his pyjama or casual clothes. And then when he goes to his office, he changes his clothes. Because the requirement of his office is to wear those clothes. He cannot be wearing his pyjamas to his office. Or if he has to go and attend some meeting or some banking, then he goes with those kind of clothes. If he goes to play some sports or some football or some sort of game, he won't be going with his office clothing. So even we see how, like even our day-to-day activity, we are wearing clothes, changing of clothes, which is just a covering. This is just a covering according to the requirement. A fire brigade man. Imagine a fire brigade man entering the whole building ablazing with fire with just normal t-shirt and a jeans trouser. He wouldn't do that. That'd be suicide. He has to wear those appropriate clothes which are anti-fire and helmets and things like that. Prepare himself before he goes to the fire. So, Krishna does the same thing. The requirement is to come as a fish. So he comes as a fish. Now why he comes as a fish, you can imagine. If there is a fish, means something had to do with water. And when there is water, we know the water appears or it floods the whole creation only at the time of annihilation. Dissolution or annihilation of the creation is that time. And so now we are talking, this is a topic of Nirodha, dissolution, annihilation. So he's asking, why did he come as a fish? In other words, he wants to know, when does this dissolution occur? I mean, it's not that only fact of knowing why he comes as a fish. In other words, he's asking him, which are the occasions when this annihilation is occurring? So this chapter is describing the Matsya. Matsya means fish, incarnation of the Lord. Krishna, there are like, the annihilation can be explained as there are two aspects of annihilation. There's like a partial annihilation, and that occurs in one day of Brahma. The day of Brahma is very, very long. We cannot estimate it with our mental speculations or concoctions. But it's explained as divided into like 14 manus. It's the 1000 yugas. No, one yuga is like the cycle, one complete cycle of Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga joined together as 4,320,000 years is one yuga. So 1,000 such yugas, you multiply 4,320,000 by 1,000, that's 4,320,000,000 years, is one day of Brahma. Now in that one day of Brahma, for the management and for creation purpose, Brahma creates 14 Manus. Manus are responsible for generation of the people of that type, of that time and place. So there are 14 Manus. So 14 Manus, if you divide it by 1,000, cycles of yugas, it comes to about 71 cycles approximately. It's not easily equally divisible, but it comes to about 71 cycles. So each Manu is occupied with 71 cycles. And whenever the Manu comes, he comes with his whole team. He comes with the Saptarishis, the seven rishis. He comes with his Indra. With every change of Manu, there's a change of the God of heaven is changed. And then also there is a particular incarnation of Vishnu also in that Manvantara. In that Manvantara, there's a particular incarnation, and also the king also changes. So these are the steam which he comes along with. So at the end of the day of Brahma, when Brahma has time to sleep, at that time, there's one partial annihilation of the universe. Is a partial, we say, because it comes to a certain degree. The water reaches to the level of the three planetary system. Bhu, Boha, Iswarga. Up to that point only. Beyond that, Mahar, Jana, Tapa and Brahmaloka, it doesn't come, goes beyond that. It reaches only up to Bhu, Boha, and Swarga. Up to that point. So that's the partial annihilation of the universe occurring only after one full day of Brahma. And then in the night time, there's another, and it remains like in, covered till the whole night time of Brahma. And the next day of Brahma, again, everything is receded, the water recedes, and the creation begins. And then again, there are 14 Manus generated. So every day, there are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. So that's one partial, and that complete annihilation occurs when it has occurred at the end of the life of Brahma. Now Brahma lives this sort of life which we are talking about, 4,320,000,000 is one day multiplied by night, will be multiplied by 2, this way you multiply by 100 years. So it's many, many years. This goes to trillions of years, about 320 trillion, something like that, it goes up to those figures. It's a very high figure. Goes, even in spite of us, me reading it so many times, it doesn't come to my mind. I mean, we because it's a frog mentality again. We are used to thousands, 1,000 pounds, 2,000, 5,000, 10. We cannot reach to the trillions of figures of the age of Brahma. So that's when final annihilation occurs. But then, sometime, like how when we, it's a midday for us, you can say. Just imagine after doing your Mangalarti, getting up 3 in the morning, and then Mangalarti and Prasadam, doing service in the temple, and then you take your afternoon Prasadam, what does happen? You normally tend to feel a bit tired. No? So you have a sort of a bit of a siesta, you can say, for 1 hour or something. You know, like in Spain, I'm coming from Spain, so it's very common there. After the afternoon meal, you have a small siesta. So this comes from time of Brahma. Even Brahma used to have some short siesta. So at that siesta time, there's another partial annihilation. So this we can see at this time, of this point of the story, I mean story, not saying the scripture, the sixth Manu is going on, Chakshusha Manu. The five Manus have passed, the Swayambhuva, we have seen Swaroshisa, then the Uttama, Tamasa, Raivata, and Chakshusha. Chakshusha Manu is right now, and is coming to an end of the Chakshusha Manu. There was a king called Satyavrata. He was a great devotee of the Lord. And now this Satyavrata is going to leave the planet, and in the next life of his, he is supposed to come as the next Manu, Vaivashvata Manu, who is the son of Vivashvan. So God, to show him mercy, he appears in the speech form, which you will see in the coming verses. You will get to see how he comes in the fish form and he blesses the king Satravata, and there occurs a partial annihilation, like how it occurs at the end of day of Brahma. Just because now Brahma is resting, so this whenever Brahma rests, the annihilation happens. Brahma has to be ever alert. He has to be awake, because he's a creator of this earth, of the universe. So he has to be alert. He cannot be resting. When he resting, so automatically the demonic forces take over. Like in the previous kalpa, when it got over, when he went to rest, Hayagriva, he came to rob or steal the Vedic knowledge. This Vedic knowledge is very precious for maintenance of the society. The demons, they tend to take up this Vedic knowledge, so there is no generation of Brahmanas. Because without Vedic knowledge, there is no Brahmana. So this Vedic knowledge has to be conserved. So at that time when Brahma is resting, Lord Vishnu wakes up. Because someone has to take care. All of the time Brahma was taking care, now Vishnu has to wake up. So Vishnu comes in this form of Matsya, the fish form. And what he does is saves this Vedic knowledge. And he saves the seas, the Brahmanas, the cows, and some living entities like the Saptarishis. He saves them for the next generation of Manu. When the next Manu comes into action, so all these are already existing. Otherwise, without seed, there's no growth of food and grains. So that's why it is protected. It's such a perfect science, no? Don't you think it's like so perfect? I mean, everything is thought of. How can it be a myth? I mean, so and you can hear any story, fairy tales, and you find in a small fairy tale of 10 minutes, you can find thousands of defects. You know, it's fantasy, but this is so perfect. Every detail is discovered. I mean, it has to be a very super intelligent and genius person to invent a story like this, and it's a story, it's not a fact. Yeah. So that perfect person was Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva was none other than the literary incarnation of the Supreme Personality Godhead. Only God can write such kind of scriptures, because they are his pastimes, and this is his biography. He has written it himself, his pastimes. So we will stop here, because of course the later verses will explain how the King Satravata was blessed by the Supreme Lord, how did the fish incarnation came into being, and then how did it save the valuable information and knowledge and the rishis. And then how Satyavarta met his end. And finally, the next Manu, the seventh Manu, which is the present Manu. We are going through the seventh Manu. You can say the half a day of Brahma is complete almost, you can say. There's 14 Manus. So. And Krishna has already taken his appearance in the 28th, because Krishna appears in the 28th of Dwapara Yuga of the seventh Manu. So the 28th Dwapara Yuga of seventh Manu has already passed. Now, few more cycles, you can say, in the seventh Manu is over, so we are perfectly crossing the seventh, the half life of Brahma or half day of Brahma is being covered now. Still long time to go, but we don't have time. There is long time maybe for the creation, but we don't have time. Few years left. We never know again whether we get a human form or we will not get a human form. And which universe will be flung, where there will be pastimes of Krishna among the devotees being chanted or no. Whether we will get this opportunity of chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra or no, we don't know. So now that we know of it, let's make the best use of this bad bargain. This body is a bad bargain. But we can make a use of this best use, make a best use of this bad bargain. And try to just come out of this cycle. And go and do the eternal service which the Nitya Siddhas are already doing. Don't think we are the only generations or only living entities in this creation. Three times more living entities are there in the spiritual world serving the Lord. So we all have to go and join them. They are our brothers waiting for us. And we have to join them and continue in our service. Hare Krishna, and thank you very much. And I'm sorry if there will be any offense or any mistakes. Of course, it's the first time for me to speak in the Manor Temple, so sometime happens in the new place. Something could go wrong, and I'm very sorry for that. If there are any comments or any questions, I will try maybe, or there are other senior leaders who can also answer.